Welcome to the DARE podcast, where it is all about helping people overcome anxiety and panic attacks. The DARE app has over 1 million downloads and is free to download at dareresponse.com. Now, without further ado, here is the DARE podcast.
Michelle, I have a tricky one for you.
Oh, you would do this one.
Yeah, do that.
What should you do when you reach a point where your bodily symptoms do not scare you anymore, but you're sick and tired of living with a physical discomfort?
Yeah, that's where everybody gets so frustrated, right? Because now you're not scared anymore. Again, that's your E. So now, like, you're going to have all the stuff that rings your bells and then the bells, right? And then just from what I've seen, like, all the, whether it's thoughts, feelings, sensations, we kind of get good at this and like, here's the ring. And then the fear usually fades first. And then the attention and awareness, there's still this awareness of heightened discomfort. Okay. But when you kind of just leave this stuff alone, and again, practice looking through it, like transparent, you become transparent, let things kind of flow through you. It becomes less important. And I know this is the part that gets people the most frustrated, the 24/7ers, right? Whether it's 24/7 physical discomfort, 24/7 actual pain, like physical chronic pain, 24/7 like thoughts of things that maybe you're not so scared, but you're still having all the thoughts. I hate to break it to you, it's actually a sign of progress, because it's like, well, your body's no longer treating them as dangerous, so there's less fear. But now if you're still having focus and attention, you're still treating it as kind of important. So notice it. But how you treat it when you find it. Yeah. All right. Well, I feel uncomfortable, or I feel really uncomfortable. Now, again, this discomfort might be right here in your face. So you can feel discomfort and then do this all day. Oh my gosh, I'm so uncomfortable. Oh my gosh, I accept them. Oh, I better do something. Oh, it's so bad. Oh, I'm trying so hard to use DARE. You're trying so hard to use DARE and you're still doing this. You're trying so hard to feel better. You're just probably smart and good at doing things, and we find subtle ways to fight. So feel really bad and feel it like this, where this is still here next to you, but you're not spending the time like this. You notice you feel really bad, and then you feel really bad with feeling really bad sitting here next to you. I had a call with somebody last week. He gave me a great line. He said something like the doers have the most options, which was cool. Like if you go out and do something, you have the most options. And like, they like their backup story was, well, if I just sat home, all I would find was what I didn't like. And I tend to sit home because I feel bad, but then all I find is feeling bad. He goes, but if I go out and I just start doing things, I might still feel bad, but I also might enjoy dinner and I might feel good and I might have a good conversation with somebody. So it'll be like, again, the attention and focus that goes towards the discomfort, which is usually where people are get a little stuck.
Right. And Luca said that was his question. So Luca, and also a last word on that. Don't give that discomfort so much weight and so much room in your life. Like if you had to put it on a scale, like here's your life and all the things that are valuable to you, and here is that discomfort that you're feeling. Like if you stare at it and say, oh, okay, this is so bad, like this gets so heavy, right? Make it a conscious decision to say, yeah, that is very uncomfortable. I'm not trying to, you know, to downplay it. I hate it. I don't like it. But at the same time, I know it's gonna subside at some point. Until it does, I'm going to give my attention and my love and my time to things that are meaningful for me. Well, is that a feeling that comes, like, is it instinctual? No. Your instincts, your anxious mind is an asshole. It's always going to tell you to do the wrong thing, the thing that makes you worse. It's never going to tell you, oh, you know what, just trust yourself, right? Go out, have dinner with your friends, and then you're going to be distracted from your pain. Never will you hear that. This is always something that you have to decide with your heart, right? Mm-hmm. If you imagine that we have three levels, we have a mind, we have a heart, and I call them the gut feelings, right? Here's the anxiety and, you know, all those fleeting feelings when you're in love and anger and stuff like that. So I can decide to focus on my gut feelings or to focus on my mind, which is usually always colored by our feelings, like state-dependent perception, or I can be still for a second and decide with my heart. My heart will always tell me what the reasonable and the good and the right thing is, even if my gut and my mind tell me, don't do that, or I don't feel like it, right? I don't feel like doing it. Make it a habit to listen to your heart that tells you the truth, and you will see that by doing that, you will feel better. And the better you feel, the more you can trust that inner voice of yours.
Right. You want to take an active approach to life and a passive approach to discomfort, right? And it's hard because if everybody's trying so hard to, how do I just do this? I'm struggling with, I don't think I can handle. It's all active words. So it's like, I just feel shitty, but I'm going to act passively towards the feeling. And Aida, you said hate. And that comes up a lot because people are trying hard, just had a call right before, but I hate this feeling, or I'm trying not to hate this feeling. Why? You don't have to convince yourself or fool yourself that you like it. Most people fight things that we hate. We're not fighting peace and joy and orgasms. We're fighting migraines. We're fighting pain. We're fighting upset stomachs. We're fighting nausea. We're fighting heart palpitations, right? We fight stuff that we don't like. We don't fight stuff we like. Let yourself not like it. You don't have to like it. You can hate it all you want. Guys fight orgasms. Okay, thanks, Ron. That'll be another phone call. So it's like, but I can just feel it. Feel that I said this to somebody yesterday. The definition of feel is to experience an emotion or a sensation. That's it. Experience things here as you experience them. I feel blank and just feel. You are with feelings. You don't fight through feelings. Okay. It's the fight that labels them as important. Just be with them. That helps the do nothingers that are trying hard not to do nothing. The opposite, the do and be. So if you're in a lot of discomfort, be with discomfort, and the do goes towards the things that are actually actionable, right? Do things you can actually take action with. Be still with the things that you can't.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I hope this comes across the right way, but I think we all need to toughen up a little bit. Like if you look at generations before us, like my mom and my grandmom, like they can take things, right? They can take things. And I think we sometimes, especially with anxiety, we feel so fragile, like and weak. I can do this. Oh no, this is back. And that is back. And that is back. Try to remind yourself in those moments, hold on a second. I have so much more in me, right? I can take hard things. Okay. I can do this. It's really important that you get yourself in the right mindset and remind yourself of your strength and your achievements, right? I'm not saying to do this in order to alleviate the anxiety, but to remind yourself of the truth. Like you're handling so much of your life, so many good things. And all of a sudden, when somebody's in the mire of anxiety, they forget all of that. Mm-hmm. I'm weak. I'm this. I can't do nothing. That's anxiety talk, right? You can listen to that, notice it, but remind yourself of the truth, right? You can do hard things. You've done it before. And you can remind yourself, you know what? I can toughen up a little bit. I can do that. Right, Michelle?
Right. And that's like grow my confidence as I grow my confidence to do things, but I have to get uncomfortable. And that's, it's not really our fault, right? Even like the last 10 years or so with technology, Amazon, I want Amazon Prime, right? We want our needs met as quickly as possible. And if I'm not going to get it from this company, I'm going to get it from this company. Who's handwriting letters to people and waiting for like their prize box from their cereal 6 weeks later after they've like saved 4 box tops of their Honey Nut Cheer. Nobody are like, oh shit, oh God, the app's not working. Like I need to help on this. I can't get this right away. I can't fix this. Like we're so like used to our needs being attended to all the time. That's just kind of where technology has taken us. It's cool. But with this stuff, it kind of has the opposite effect. It becomes more of a expectation that I should always feel good. And I think that's kind of like a myth when it comes to anxiety because, well, before I always felt good and now I feel so bad. I just want to go back to the old me. No, you felt shit before. You probably just barely noticed it. It wasn't even a blip on the radar. And now you're more sensitive and aware of things. Now everything feels important and it's learning to kind of, again, not tolerate through discomfort or feel better. But as you grow your tolerance for discomfort, discomfort stops being so important.
Right. Next question from Julie. The hardest part for me is the run towards. When I try to make myself run towards my anxiety and ask it to do its worst, it never feels natural to me. I can't make my anxiety worse when I'm doing this. Am I doing something wrong? Well, Julie, there's nothing natural about this. Right? If you wouldn't know, dear, and somebody would tell you, oh, you're scared? Well, invite more crazy in, right? This is what you should do. Like, everybody would like, oh, what? Are you crazy? So it's not a natural thing. It doesn't feel natural, especially not in the beginning. It feels very, very, very fake, right, Michelle? Very fake to say, you know what, bring it on. And it's almost like the anxiety feels so big and you feel so small, screaming at it, bring it on, bring it on. But you feel so weak. But if you do that, you will notice that you feel you're growing taller and the anxiety is actually shrinking. And it gets easier and easier to do that. And when you say your anxiety is not increasing, then that's actually a good sign that you're doing it right, because run towards is designed. You're running towards the thing that you're fearing the most, and you are willing and ready to experience the worst case scenario that anxiety is threatening you with. And you are making the experience that, well, it's not happening. It was just a threat, like an empty threat, an illusion. So this is why your anxiety does not increase when you run towards it. So actually, it's a good sign. And I would encourage you to stick with it. Run towards, in my opinion, people just don't do it often enough. Run towards
is... No, everybody skip. Everybody wants today.
Everybody.
Like R is like gets you. R is the thing. Because if you're not doing R, then you're not really doing dare.
Right.
First of all, it's only four letters and you're already missing like 25% of them. But like, if I'm saying it's okay that it's there, but no more than what's already there, then it's not okay.
Then that means, that what is there is labeled as danger, right? It's all about the label. So if 25%, if you say, well, I can accept this, but not more of that, then you're essentially saying, and that 25% that I am able or willing to allow is already danger, and that is all I can take.
Right.
And this is the problem, because you are labeling something as danger that is not danger. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, one reason why people sometimes stay stuck in anxiety for months and months and years, right? Because they stay stuck and allow. I can allow so much. I can allow so much. That is not allowance. Allowance means I allow all and everything. If it is 25 or 125%, I'm okay with both. So bring it on. Okay, today it's 50%. Next day it might be 100%. And 2 weeks later, maybe it's just 5%. I don't care. I allow it all. My door is open for whatever there is behind that door. This is true allowance. And this is how Run Towards ties in so beautifully into that. If I can allow that, I can allow this. I might feel for a moment the surge of adrenaline because I'm doing something new and something that goes against my instinct, right? But it is the right thing to do. And I would highly encourage you to implement this step, because I've seen it over and over and over. People being stuck in anxiety, being stuck in setbacks, applying a run towards step with the right attitude and being out of that in a matter of a few days. It works that well.
Right. You might be more scared when you run towards, you will probably be more scared, but the message you're sending is I am not in any more danger, right? I will never tell you to run towards danger. So this was in one of the videos. If I turned and this thing was here and I was over here and I turned and I went, oh my God. So now my body's alerted me. Something I thought that was a tiger, that thing scared me. So now I'm scared of a picture of a tiger. Fear plus a picture of tiger does not equal tiger. Tiger equals tiger. So run towards is like, oh my God, I thought that I originally identified this as danger. I thought this was a tiger, but it turns out it's not. It's just a picture of a tiger. Oh, I can be scared and go right up towards this thing and touch it. So I can show myself this isn't danger. Oh, look, oh, that reminded me of danger, but it's not. And I'm acting in a way that it's not. I can have 10 more pictures of 10 more tigers that are even more scary looking, and I can feel more scared. Scared and danger are different things. Scared is a feeling that you use to fight danger. If you are really, really stuck, you are probably just a really, really good fighter. You're treating fear as if it's danger. It's not. So run towards, you're going towards the thing that it's alerting you to so that you can show it. This is not dangerous. I can feel more fear too. You can send me more fear. Send me more. This thing will never become danger. This paper tiger will never hurt me. So keep sending me fear. I hope that helps kind of like see the reason. Because if your goal is, I have to feel better, it happens, but not directly. You feel better as a byproduct. Your body stops sending you fear when you stop acting as if you're in danger. That's why we run towards. So whoever sent in the run towards question, if you're on here, I hope that helps.
I would love to hear from you guys, like post on the Facebook group who tried run towards after this call, and then tell us your experience with it. Okay, next question. Since the alarm is physiologically the same, whether it's a real threat health-wise or a panic attack, how do we tell the difference? What if we misinterpret it and treat a real threat as just a panic attack? That's an interesting question, but it kind of like makes me smile because it kind of reflects on your trust, right? In you're able to differentiate that. You have been in danger in your life. You know how that feels. You know when you have a panic attack and you are focused and obsessed with your symptoms. This is when you know this is anxiety, because when there is a real threat, an external threat, for example, you don't notice your heart pounding. You don't notice your palms sweating. You don't notice your blurry vision. You don't notice all of that. You are focused somewhere else. In anxiety, you are obsessed about yourself. It's all about me, 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 and my body and my mind and what is going on. Everything is centered here, not external. Mm-hmm. Health-wise, if you mean that you have physical sensations and you're not sure if this is a panic attack or is it something more serious, well, a panic attack, you know, it has the same pattern. It comes on pretty rapidly. It peaks and then it comes down again. And that's really important. People think the apprehension is it's going to go up and it's going to stay there forever and ever and ever and never come down. It is biologically absolutely impossible for your nervous system to trigger a panic attack that stays up there forever and ever. It is not possible. So trust that no matter how scary a panic attack is, it comes down. But of course, it goes without saying, if you have any health issues with your heart or your breathing or whatever it is, then go get an examination. Put your mind at ease. Get a full examination, not just only a blood test. If you want to be sure and put your mind at ease, do that. But after that, if those results come back clear, trust it. And the more panic attacks you have, the better you're used to them. And you know, oh, this is a panic attack and this is something real. But trust yourself. You have been in danger. You have had health issues. You know how they feel and you know how a panic attack feels. Don't allow anxiety to convince you otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, really nothing to add to that. It's that's what it is. Usually when it's a panic attack, we're kind of go looking for danger, right? Oh my gosh, I feel so scary. It feels like it's going to be, and it's always even 2 seconds into the future. Usually when there's an emergency, and if anybody like has been in an emergency, like you attended to the emergency, right? You weren't focused on anything else other than staying alive right now. And the focus ends up going inward on how I feel when I'm staying alive right now. It's a great example. Somebody on boot camp months ago gave this example on the group. He was practicing dare, going through the forest, going through a wooded walk. Practicing, like being with my sensations, like accepting it's not danger, like trying to convince yourself that it's not danger. And on the hike, a tree fell, okay? Comes crashing down across the person's path. And the person on the call said, never in my life have I so clearly been able to differentiate between me here going, it's not danger. That's fine. It's not danger. I said, to actually being in danger. And I didn't have to do a damn thing about this. I automatically responded to the tree. I responded to the tree, right? And it was like, I didn't have to think about it. I just jumped. My body just reacted. I did this last week. My house, or 3 inches from my house, got hit by lightning during a big thunderstorm. I didn't tell you. My house got hit by lightning. Ooh. You've been having the bad luck. Now I haven't. I swear, I don't know how my body went from this part of the house to this part of the house, but talk about when there is danger, and that's that idea of trust. Your body is designed to stay alive. I didn't think about jumping. I wasn't concerned about my fear. The sound like my house exploded, everything went really bright outside, and my body went, jumped. I was by the sink, and this, like, I wasn't consciously doing this. It was automatic. When you know, when you're overthinking, you're really like consciously looking.
Rumination. Yeah. Do all the time.
Right. You got like this. You're like, is it danger? Is it danger? You don't usually go looking for danger. You're like, oh, lightning struck my house. And in half a millisecond, I did like 10 things, right? I jumped from the sink. I knew the door was there. I went further away from the outside. Like, your body's designed to do it. And like, you know, we try and say on like all these calls now, it's trust. Let your body's designed to take care of this stuff. We are designed to live out here. That's why our body's self-regulating. We spent a lot of time here with like the back of the watch open. It's a lot of waste of time, and you're meddling in a place that's not to be meddled. Your job is to be here.
Yeah. And remind yourself that, I know this sounds so mean, but I mean it in the kindest way. Like, anxiety is something we do to ourselves, right? Because our alarm system, we should be appreciative of it, right? We should say thank you to it, that it's doing such an amazing job. Yes, sometimes it misfires, but the misfire is not where the anxiety is. The misfire is just a misfire. You know, a system that is so sensitive, and it is so sensitive in order to protect you, but a system that is so sensitive, you know, is also sensitive to a misfire, right? It happens, but this is not where the anxiety is. Misfires happen, right? But you respond straight. And when you start fearing your own system, you know, it's right. You doing that. And that's the bittersweet truth. It's you doing that. That's bitter to hear, but the sweet in that is that you can change that, because it's behavior and it's cognition. You can do something about it. You can heal your anxiety by responding differently. And that is good news.
Yeah.
I had missed
that by leaving yourself alone. Leave it alone. Leave this alone.
Yeah. You know, gyms are open up again. And a few days ago, I thought it would be a great idea to go 8 in the evening to the gym, because I had so much energy. I was like, yeah, I need to do this. So I went there, had strength training. I couldn't sleep until like 2:30 or something. Why was I anxious? No, but my body was just like on fire with all this metabolic stress. And every time I wanted to fall asleep, I jerked awake. Was it uncomfortable? Yes. You see, that was a misfire. Typical, nothing happened, right? I couldn't sleep because my body was still so worked up from that. But what is the response to that? If I would have said, oh my God, why can't I sleep now? What is happening? Right? The discomfort was the same.
It's all coming back. Here comes insomnia. Oh my gosh, now I'm not going to sleep again, right? Here we go. I thought I had this under control.
Yeah. And then your alarm system goes like, what? You're scared? Oh, let me give you energy. And this is when you feel the panic then. This is where the anxiety is. This is where you go wrong. We don't do that on purpose, of course. But if you change that, you can change everything else. You are the boss in this. You lead this show, right? It's not your body. It's you.
Right. And we get things wrong all the time. That was like how I started off the last Dare Advance call. It was like where you, and like this never comes up on the calls, because this is just, people just automatically accept the fact that, oh, I thought it was this, but it was something else. Like, oh, I thought I heard one of the kids get up, but it was like something outside. One of the trees cracked outside. Oh, I thought like I had a hair on my arm and I went like this, because I thought it was a bug. But turns out I was wrong. It was just a hair. It felt like a bug, but then I looked and it was just a hair. So we get shit wrong all the time. So does our alarm system sometime. Oh, thought it was danger. Sorry. So you kind of stuck with this energy for a little bit. Sorry, I thought that was danger. It's not. It's just the bridge, right? Oh, it's not danger. She just can't sleep. As long as you act like it's not danger, that's how you communicate with your body. You communicate with this one little part of our body where you're doing this, you're calling it for help, and where you're doing this, you're telling it thanks. Now, when you do this, zip immediately. And when you do this, it becomes a gradual turn off. Okay. So immediately turns on, which we want for bears, right? And gradually turns off because this is the part of us that doesn't give a shit about how we feel. Okay. It cares about danger. Danger, danger, danger. Oh, no danger. Oh, all right. Well, no danger. Danger. Okay. So remember, it's the wheel keeps running because the hamster keeps running. Okay. We think, but I have to keep running because the wheel keeps spinning. No, stop running first. Stop running first. And then the wheel comes to a stop.
Yeah, and it takes a while, right? It's not like I stop fighting and then the next day I'm fine. It takes a little bit, but yeah. Okay, I have another very good question, which I think a lot of people, there's this weird lighting. Let me move over here. It's my face. which I think many people can relate to. I'm not going to read the whole question because it's pretty long, but I'm just going to summarize. Diagnosed with general anxiety, then panic attacks, stress. And then I got the fear that I might have a mental illness. Then I went Googling, which worsened my anxiety. Then consulted a psychologist, diagnosed me with general anxiety. Now I have ups and downs, a few days were good, blah, blah, blah. A lot of illogical thoughts scare me, thoughts of schizophrenia. And after I start scanning for it, it makes my anxiety worse. Mm-hmm. I think almost everybody can relate to this fear of losing control, going crazy, or developing a mental illness. And you know, I want to tell you something, which is the most interesting part about this fear, is that, you know, when we think of psychosis, we think of delusions, grandiose ideas, visual and auditory hallucinations, and stuff like that. But those are what clinicians call positive symptoms. Mm-hmm. And positive symptoms are not always evident. What is much more evident is the negative symptoms. The negative symptoms is social withdrawal, weird speech, stuff like that, changes in interests. They maybe don't care about, don't self-care anymore, don't care about their house anymore. It's totally different from the positive symptoms. But of course, people with anxiety, they get fixated on the positive symptoms. Am I hearing something? Am mm-hmm. I seeing something, right? This is what they're fixated at. And they keep scanning for those symptoms to happen because their body feels so out of control. And they think, okay, this is the next thing that is going to happen, right? So keep in mind that positive symptoms or hallucinations and stuff like that is not the thing you should scan for. If you want to scan for something else, for the things I mentioned. And then if you look back, you're like, okay, that's not me. I don't have weird speech. Like I can speak just fine. Okay. And it is normal. When you have so much stress hormones in your body and you don't have context. Context is the most important thing in anxiety. What we mentioned before, if I'm driving somewhere and I see there was a car crash or, I don't know, a bicycle on the freeway, then I have context. So my anxiety is at the right place. I'm looking at it. Oh my God, I need to be alert and awake and I did need to do something. My brain now knows, oh, here is the danger. Here. But with anxiety, since we can just imagine threat, intrusive thoughts, what if thoughts, you know, all these crazy scenarios in our head, our body acts as this is already happening now, right? But, and then it looks for that situation, there's nowhere to be found. Why? Because it's in your head, it's imagined, but your body reacts as if it's the same. And since that context is missing, it needs to fill in the blank. What is the context then for this heightened anxiety and this panic? Let me scan. Oh, there's nothing. Oh, but here's something. I think you might go crazy. You know, you've read one time that, you know, people who go crazy, they experience this and that. Oh, yeah, that's me. Right? This is what happens. And this happens automatically. Right? Nobody has ever gone crazy from anxiety. Nobody has ever gone crazy from anxiety. And you diffuse that fear easily with humor by saying, oh, well, if I go crazy, at least I don't have to put up with this anymore, right? Because I wouldn't know anymore. That's fine. So let's do it. Run towards. Let's do it. Let's go crazy, right? Let's do it because I'm done with this anxiety. I'm done fighting. I'm done enduring this. So let's have it. And then wait and nothing will happen, right? You can't make yourself go crazy. That is not possible. And schizophrenia and all of these other psychotic illnesses, they develop very early. There is a big genetic predisposition in there. And a lot of things need to come together for that to flare up. Anxiety is a very small trigger for people with psychotic illnesses to trigger that flare up, right? Mm-hmm. Anxiety is stress. Anxiety is a consequence. Okay. It's a consequence of behavior and cognition interpretation. And schizophrenia and these other illnesses, they are caused by an illness. So there's actually chemical changes in the brain going on, very different from anxiety.
Right. And one like good little cliff note to take with you when it comes to like somebody who's psychotic and somebody who I feel like I'm becoming psychotic. Right. I feel like I'm losing it. I can't put my thoughts together. Oh, I just heard something. Right. Is that crazy? The fact like people say people that are crazy aren't scared of going crazy. OK, so that comes up. But then people start saying, but then I had the thought and I didn't have the fear. Does that really mean I'm on like the next level? I'm about to go crazy. No, the key word really is awareness. The fact that you are aware and tuned into it is the complete opposite of somebody who is like acutely psychotic. Somebody who is acutely psychotic is not aware. And we have the complete opposite situation going on. We are so tuned in, so aware, so connected, so scanning. So what is that? It's not like, again, it's just another paradox of this. We're full of energy and looking for things that remind us of crazy. And it is the complete opposite of how psychosis actually presents. So like the 21 second count that you were saying, like, bring it on, just make me go crazy. Like that was from Panic Away, which was like the book Barry made before Dare. And I really liked that step. Okay. Mm-hmm. People were just doing it wrong. So that's kind of like the R of Dare now. But basically, for anybody who hasn't read that, 21 seconds was basically like, you have 21 seconds to do your absolute worst. So if you're going to kill me, you've got 21 seconds to do so. People were misinterpreting it. They're like, well, I counted down from 21 and I'm still scared, or it's still there. And what did I do wrong? It's not 21 seconds for it to go away. It's 21 seconds to say, you know what? I think I'm about to go crazy. I feel like crazy's coming right now. Let's see. I'm going to give it 21 seconds. And if crazy doesn't show up in 21 seconds, I've got shit to do. Okay. So let's go. I'm full of fear and I'm ready to fight. So for the next 21 seconds, doors open. If I'm going to go crazy, we'll deal with crazy. And then at second number 22, come right along with me. I just have fear and thoughts of crazy while I keep driving. Again, engage means just keep doing whatever the hell you were doing before you thought you had to do something else. Okay. And bring it with you. 21 seconds is that idea of like, all right, well then let's throw up. Then let's pass out. Then let's get completely detached from my body. Then let's whatever it is, you're fighting the worst case exaggerated scenario of it. Give it 21 seconds to show up because you're ready for it, right? You're full of fight energy. So if it shows up, you're ready. And if it doesn't, that's E, engage. Back into what you're doing before.
Thank you for listening to the DARE podcast. The DARE app has over 1 million downloads and is helping people all around the world to overcome anxiety and panic attacks. You can download the app for free at dareresponse.com.